No.
Except for Ghostbusters. It takes all the old school sort of 30s and 40s horror comedies and makes them work.
Well, that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to do a homage to the old ones, because, like, you know, Abbott and Costello and Three Stooges and all those guys had their horror stories.
Things like people who have forgotten, like Mantan Moreland, who was like an African American actor. He's got a lot of horror comedy films, and it used to be the real staple that the African American player would be the comic relief in a horror film. And Ghostbusters was originally apparently going to be an Eddie Murphy vehicle.
That is a no-brainer.
And sorry to interrupt Sunday art.
Turn that inverse parabola upside down, because it's time for Grain of Truth!
Thank you very much to the bird in the audience. I really appreciate you swooping in. Hello and welcome to Grain of Truth, the show that keeps the truth in the children's play area. Your Grains of Truth today... A guy who married the influenza virus says that it was quite the catch. Those in love with jaundice sufferers are said to have yellow fever.
You only get better.
Those who prefer to eat a large amount of confectionery should choose Quantity Street chocolates.
Is the real ones called Quality Street? Quantity.
I got your back.
It's okay, Rob. It's all right. I'm a big boy now. It's fine. Thanks.
Yes, you are.
Racist skinheads who glow in the dark are called neon Nazis. There we go. To introduce our panelists for this episode, it's over to the Stack Overflow, Christian Mazzari.
Thank you, David. From Deakin University, representing psychology, it's Rowan Johnson. From Charles Sturt University, Wagga Wagga campus, representing heroes, it's Rob Lloyd. From RMIT University, representing technology, it's John Corey. And from the University of Tasmania, Launceston campus, representing monsters, it's Scott McAteer.
Grain of Truth is simple. I award points to the panelists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is the Information Superhighway. It leads you all the way to 1993. Before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everyone. Can you name the Grain of Truth that connects all four of our panelists' surnames? That's Johnson, Lloyd, Corey, and McAteer. And we'll come back to this at the end of the program, but I'll give you the clue. American states. American states is your clue. But we begin now with round one, which is called 90-second TED Talk. Each player must give a short speech relating to their field in 90 seconds. At 60 seconds, they'll hear this noise. And at the 90-second mark, they'll hear this noise, at which they must cease and desist. Rowan, you're first, representing psychology, and your topic is people are more easily led than sheep. Rowan, your time begins now.
People are led more easily than sheep. Like, we've all heard someone be called a sheep before because they've been easily led or they've been a follower or whatever, but I don't think we're giving sheep enough credit. Have you ever actually tried to get a sheep to do something? It's really difficult. It's really hard. Okay? And, like, you know, sure, they can get led easily around a farm or something like that by a dog trying to bite their legs. But I've seen a grown man running away from a grumpy pug. And,
you said you'd never share that story.
Yeah, I know. And he was having a hard enough time even breathing, keeping up with you, let alone even being able to bite you at all. But, so, you know, I think we're not giving sheep enough credit, and they're, in fact, becoming our obedient scapegoats. Another animal that's unjustly stigmatised, but that's a story for another lecture. But anyway, people are bad, they do bad stuff, and they do stuff that they know is bad. Like, hey, Mr. Nazi, why'd you kill all of those people?
Oh, well.
Hitler told me that I should. I knew it was bad, but I did it. I regret it now, but, you know, he did tell me to pretty sternly. Stanley Milgram was a Jewish psychologist in the 1950s, and he was worried about World War II happening again, and he did this whole obedience study where he got a bunch of men in a room and he made them shock people with electricity when they got questions wrong in a test, like at the start of Ghostbusters. And, you know, and 60% of them went all the way up to lethal volts. Simply because a guy, they go, oh, do I have to do this? They're screaming, they're kicking, they're complaining about their heart. They go, well, you must continue. And they did. I couldn't even get a sheep to eat my sausage roll at Collingwood Children's Farm. People are more easily led than sheep.
I love the fact that in your reenaction, the Nazi was played by Henry's cat.
Yes, yes.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Sorry.
Christopher Rabbit's invaded Poland again.
Oh. In fairness, the Nazis did employ a lot of sheep in their war machine,
that's
mostly piloting U-boats.
Moving.
Yeah.
That's
I think you were trying to say, Rob, that was bad.
He pulled the wool over my eyes.
That was a bit sheepish. Yeah. Just.
Stop! The joke's already dead.
Let's just get through this thing.
We're ramming it down their throats.
You laughed at his jokes! It's just a popularity contest to you kids! Anyway, our next speaker is Rob Lloyd, representing Heroes, and your topic is Happy Birthday, Ghostbusters! Rob, your time begins now.
Tomorrow is the 8th of June. I know this will be coming out after that date, but this is a moment to remember. The 8th of June is the 30th birthday of Ghostbusters when it was released into the public. And what the public got was the single greatest comedy of all time. It was a film I saw when I was very, very young, and it scared the hell out of me at the same time as making me wet myself with laughter. I've learned three important things from Ghostbusters, and I'd like to share them with you now. One, it is perfectly acceptable to slap a priest across the face only during a crisis, and you have to call him by his first name, so take that with you. I've also learned that swearing is so cool. I learned some of my favourite terms of swearing from Ghostbusters, such as the effects. I'll tell you what the effect is, it's pissing me off! Great one. Another one is, since I have been with his man, I have seen that would turn you white. But last but definitely not least, Ghostbusters taught me that you don't need to be the bravest or the strongest or the toughest. You can be the smartest, the silliest, and the best smartass there is. And I have taken that with me right up to this very day. Happy birthday, Ghostbusters, and thank you.
A question for the panel. Is there a television show or film that you have learned life lessons from?
Yeah, if you've ever watched The Goonies, you know, don't hide in a freezer with a dead body in it. Because, that's a pretty good lesson. Next time you walk past that freezer with a dead body in it, hide somewhere else.
And don't never judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, you know, the big monstrous guy is actually...
Sloth.
Yeah, is absolutely Sloth.
Hey, you guys! Well, I was just going to say, I didn't see Goonies when I was a kid because I was poor. And, no, seriously, I never saw Goonies, and I was really, really excited to see it. And I saw it like about a year ago, and I didn't like it. I don't know. Like, is there something wrong with me?
No. I guess so. It could be a case of, you know, things that we grow up with at the time. Like, I've gone back and watched certain films that I watched as a kid. Like, I went back and watched The Neverending Story.
That sucks.
It doesn't hold up. I went back and watched Spaceballs.
Oh, no, Spaceballs.
You never go back.
No, I do.
Yeah.
I've got to take issue with Neverending Story not being good anymore. I'll still sometimes crack out that they look like big, strong hands.
But I couldn't hold on to them.
I tell you, a film that I loved as a child that I can't watch anymore, I think it's because you, when you learn too much about production, and that's The Adventures of Milo and Otis. Because once you find out that most of those cats are dead during the production, and there's a scene that I saw on YouTube and it horrified me the most. And it was where there's a small scene where the cat is in a farmyard, and for some inexplicable reason, who should crop up in this farmyard? That classic farmyard animal, the crab. And a crab is attacking its nose. Literally attacking its nose. Now, of course, in an animated CGI world, that would be fine. This is a real cat and a real crab. And it just, that's... that's right. That cat, those cats will be fine, right?
Yeah, they're
fine?
All prosthetic.
Our next speaker is Scott McAteer, representing Monsters, and your topic is, why do monsters live in the cupboards and under the bed? Scott, your time starts now.
Yes, I'll be drawing on Antoine Augustin Camus' treatise, A Sincere Conversation with the Monsters Resident in the Bedchamber of Miss Elspeth Prendergast, Age 7, which was published in 1753. Camus records his conversation with Grobnik the Monster, and I will now present some extracts. You are Grobnik the Monster?
Yes, I am. And you are Antoine Augustin Carmel, the Benedictine monk and your abbot general of the Congregation of St. Paul?
Yes, how did you know?
I'm a very well-informed monster.
So tell me, Grobnik, why do monsters live under the bed?
Oh, lots of good stuff under the bed, oh yes. Especially your bed, for instance. There's toast. Mmm. There's that boring book you never finished reading. And then there's that naughty book you read a lot. Oh, there's socks. Nice warm socks. I only need one, of course, because of where I wear them. Bits of fluff. Oh, yes. Young Elspeth's got lots of bits of fluff under her bed. Get enough bits of fluff together and you can build another monster. Sometimes there's stray bits of Lego under her bed.
What's Lego?
It's an anachronism.
Any other reason why monsters live under the bed? Or in cupboards?
Well, it's dark under there.
Oh. Why do monsters like the dark?
Well, you see, we remember a time when the whole world was dark. When the sun was blocked by ash, and then we took your children when we wanted to. And then the sun returned, so we hide under the beds, in the cupboards, in the dark places that you fear to go. And we wait, wait for the darkness to envelop the world again.
On an unrelated note, Elspeth Prendergast disappeared from her room 3 weeks later during a solar eclipse. She was never heard from again.
I'm pretty sure I've met that monster at Flinders Street Station. And the next and final speaker is John Corry, representing technology. And your topic is, if revolutionary France was on Facebook. John, your time starts now.
Let us entertain the notion that the IT revolution had not taken place in California's Silicon Valley in the 1970s, but instead in provincial France in the 1770s. Led by visionaries such as Willem de Gaet, and his Fenêtre System d'Operation, and Stéphane Lajobs and his Pont Computationnel. The seats for Facebook are, as it would have been known, La Livre de Visage would have been sown. But how would the French Revolution played out if social networking were at play? Well, firstly, the storming of the Bastille would have been organised more of a Facebook event. So therefore, it would have actually been more of like a flash mobbing of the Bastille. And then, I can imagine Louis XVI might have suspected that all was not well when he logged on as Louis XVI to find that essayist and all-round muckraker Marat had written some nasty stuff about him on his wall and that everybody had unfriended him. And finally, Marie Antoinette, the former darling of Le Livre de Visage, whose famous statement, let them eat cake, reveals to us that she clearly had an eating disorder, and as such, would have been cyberbullied to the point that bulimia, and not the guillotine, got the end of her. So I say, the effects of the, with all of the efficiencies of the IT revolution, the French Revolution would have played out in a couple of weekend house parties rather than the years of bloodshed that led to the ultimate rise of Napoleon and continental warfare that followed. Thank you.
If you could travel back in time, panelists, and take all your photos and tweet about it, where would you like to go, and what would you tweet?
Well, being a massive Doctor Who fan, I would take the time machine back to the 1960s, because during the 1960s they wiped all these missing episodes. So there's about 109 missing episodes of Doctor Who. It's like the Holy Grail for nerds. So I'd go back in time, pirate my own copies, bring them back, and I would rule the universe.
Periods of time?
Back to like, you know, 0 AD or 33 AD, just to see what actually happened.
Right, yeah.
I go back to 1992 to get some lollygobble bliss bombs.
They still make them, but they're not as good anymore.
And
they're bigger back in that time.
Yeah, apple Pop-Tarts. Right. Oh, now they're all chocolate.
And the music these days, the young people listen to.
Yeah, go back to a time when vanilla ice was king.
I love the idea if it turns out that those apple Pop-Tarts were carcinogenic or something. That's why they took them off.
Probably.
Like most things in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that's the end of that round. It's over to the delightful Christian for a score update.
At the end of that round, it's John Corey in the lead, by Jove!
One whole Jove. Next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two and must apply their skills to an application task. Scott and John, and I'll be challenging you to give a description of an event as if it was an old-style 1980s text adventure game. Mm. John, I'll get you to be the player.
Right.
And Scott, you'll be the description of the text adventure. And what I'd like you to be doing is your description. This is the text adventure game about a lonely night in.
The room is dark.
Go east.
You bang into the wall.
Go west.
You walk into the kitchen. The kitchen is a large room. It covers a fridge, which has nothing in it except an old empty pizza box, and there is a bottle of wine on the counter.
Screw bottle.
I'm afraid I can't let you do that. This is a PG game.
Smash bottle.
The bottle smashes like your hopes and dreams. Wine spills all across the floor.
Eat pizza.
You have to open the fridge first.
Open fridge.
The fridge door opens. The light flickers on and off.
Eat pizza.
You crunch through the cardboard pizza box, hoping to get to the center. The disappointment of the taste breaks your heart.
Go south.
You're in your bedroom. It is dark and empty.
Look under bed.
Under the bed, there's some bits of fluff. And Grobnik the monster.
Kill monster.
Kill monster with what?
Get bottle.
You go back to the kitchen and pick up the bottle. You cut your hand.
Go south.
You go into the bedroom, dripping blood all the way through. Grobnik the monster smells the blood.
Eat monster.
Grobnik the monster fills your stomach with a warm glow of happiness.
Let's go. That was everything I wanted and more. fabulous. Robin Rowan, I'll be challenging you to be on a job interview panel. So you'll be on a job interview panel. And I want you to explain together which animals in the world would you hire to do the following jobs. So you'll be discussing together. You'll be thinking about these various different jobs. And you'll be deciding which animal and why should be doing each of these jobs. The first one is a census data analyst, I should say.
Well, it's a tough position. You need someone with responsibility, commitment, focus.
That's right. They also need fingers in which to enter the data into the PC.
Well, fingers are one option, but they could have very long beaks. So my choice is penguin.
Oh my God, you just blew my mind.
I did that right then. And you know what? I'll blow your mind again. We'll use fairy penguins because they're cuter. And there's many of them. They can do it in half the time.
Our data doesn't stand a chance.
Take that, data.
Booyah!
Booyah, Shaka Khan!
Yeah.
The next one we've got here is for a pool boy. Pools.
Yeah.
They need cleaning, Rowan. Rohan.
That's right, they do need cleaning. And what better animal to clean the bottom of a pool than a grumpy meerkat?
And what's a better way to cheer up a meerkat? Get a cleaning!
That's right.
Have you ever seen a meerkat clean itself and look unhappy? Never!
No, I've never seen a meerkat clean a swimming pool either. It'll bring the investors.
And what we need are investors, Rohan!
That's right.
Yeah!
Yeah, booyah!
Booyah, Shaka Khan, Shakira.
The next one is a makeup salesperson at Meijer.
Hey, do you know what we need?
A makeup salesperson from Meijer?
That's right, and I think the perfect animal for that is a sloth.
You know why?
Because their faces are enormous. and they don't even move much at all, so it'd be like a statue standing there, and you... Have you ever tried to apply makeup to any other animal?
No, I started with sloths, and that's all I wanted.
Well...
That's it.
You saved a hell of a lot of time.
You know what?
What?
You changed my world.
Booyakasha!
Booyah, Shaquille O'Neal!
Finally...
Oh, another one.
Finally, for a sexy Latin dance teacher.
Yeah, there's only one animal we need for that. You know what I'm thinking.
I know what you're thinking.
Turtle.
Turtle, that's right.
Not these tortoises, because they got the big feet.
That's right, they got the big feet. And the turtle, it'll just get on its shell, and you can just spin it. And there's nothing sexier than just spinning a turtle
just
on its back.
Keep on doing that action, man.
That's right, and the best bit...
That's my hero in a nutshell.
Even if it gets annoyed, it doesn't want to do it anymore.
It can't get up!
It
can't do anything, man!
You just
gotta do it!
You just keep spinning it until you're satisfied.
Yeah.
Booyakasha!
Booyakasha!
Michelangelo!
I didn't know that wrong and wrong!
You don't lie, Dave. Much like my hips, they don't lie.
Shakira reference.
And now, at the end of that round, it's over to Christian. Christian, can you tell me who's in the lead?
At the end of that round, it's Rowan Johnson in the lead by a 10% discount.
It's like 10 cents.
Our next round is called Stumble, Mumble, or Bumble. Our players are challenged to give impromptu responses to ridiculous topics. If they stumble, mumble, or bumble, other members of the panel can make a noise like this, or I can make a noise like this, and I can take over the topic. Our first speaker is Scott, and your topic is Edgar Allan Poe goes into a Starbucks, ..
So Edgar Allan Poe, right, he goes into a Starbucks, right, and he says, why is a raven like a writing desk? And they say, look, do you want a long black? I want everything black. He says, ha, 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 oh, comedy guy, I got a million dollars. They give him a latte, a soy latte. He goes, what the hell? This is Baltimore, 1843. We don't even have soy yet. How are you doing that, old mate? I'm your mucker.
I'm going to save you from there, but that was brilliant.
I'm your mucker.
It's still that monster from Flinders Street Station.
Never mucker.
John, yes. Why are uncertainties referred to as being up in the air?
Uncertainties are referred as being up in the air because when things are in the air, the wind can blow them hither and thither. And therefore, we do not know where they're going to land. But when they land, they become certain. So therefore, when you're in the air, you're uncertain.
Is there a possibility that Schrodinger's cat is up in the air?
Yes. Schrodinger's cat is up in the air, and it's the thing that is trying to hit the other things that are up in the air, because if it can float up in the air... then it would play with other things. Because you know how cats get obsessed with like things on string? And it would be doing that in the sky, wouldn't it?
And it will also be on the ground sleeping and napping.
Mm. Yeah, at the same time.
Splendid. Rob, costumes are important hero decisions.
Not are they important, they're fabulous.
Concise and to the point. Delightful. Rowan, kids today are no better off than Dickensian orphans.
Kids today are no better off than Dickensian orphans. You can't even say Dickensian. Oh, I did it.
Surely the answer then for kids today is to just buy a convict a pie.
Yes.
I think we've just got into the Twilight Zone. We'll move on. John, yes. If you could have afternoon tea with anyone, who would it be and why?
It would be the Queen. Because she would have the best tea set in the world, she'd have the largest tea set in the world, and I'm sure that the thing that she used to make the tea would be the most sophisticated and advanced tea-making technology the world has ever seen. She'd be able to come up to this, and before you've even actually decided what tea you want, it would already be made for you in a cup with, like, you know, soy and chai and everything that you possibly want in a tea.
You know she's not a genie, right?
This tea technology could change the world. It seems to be able to predict the future. I'm pretty sure future predicting technology could be used for something better than tea making.
If it does, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, the fact, you have the Queen of England there. You can ask so many questions. Let's talk about the hard issues, okay? Tea.
Rob, why should we visit your hometown?
What's that?
Why should we visit your hometown?
We've got a zoo. I'm from Dubbo, country New South Wales. Anytime I met someone when I was a kid growing up, they go, I'm from Dubbo. They go, ah, the zoo place. Not only the zoo place, we've got the highest teen pregnancy in all of New South Wales.
The home of love.
Yeah. So, zoo. Well, love or desperation in the night.
Next speaker, Scott, actually. Well, who has the best voice in the world?
The best voice in the world? Well, generally, Sean Connery. Sean Connery has generally got a good reputation for having a fantastic voice.
Sounds a bit like Johnny Carson.
Johnny Carson does sound a bit like Sean Connery. How, if Johnny Carson and Sean Connery met, what would they say to each other?
Wow, you know what? Johnny, I just saw Millie Vanilli
with the impersonating guest.
Chicken McNuggets. We sailed into victory.
I love the fact that the two, Johnny Carson and Sean Connery, make Bane from...
did you see Millie Vanilli?
I guess.
We conquered them like Rome!
Millie Vanilli, when you finish your song, then you have my permission to die.
Christian, the points, please.
At the end of that round, it's Rob Lloyd in the lead by one Bill Murray.
Yeah. Oh! That's at least worth 7 Dan Aykroyd. Okie dokie, but before we find out who is today's winner, it's time to reveal the answer to our Grain of Truth connection challenge. Firstly, did anyone on the panel get the connection between your surnames? It's Johnson, Lloyd, Curry, and McAteer. Anyone on the panel?
What was the clue again?
The clue was American states.
Oh, yes. That it's the last names of all the people of the presidents of the United States of America.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't know the United...
No, tell me, and give me a short bio.
They were an awesome band in the 90s who released one kick-ass album. They had... They did the theme song for the Drew Carey Show, and then their second album came out, and they bombed. There were only 3 members in the band, but one of them had... it's a like a hyphen name.
Oh, a hyphen name. Was that wonderful man, McAteer Johnson?
Yes, it was. His name was Bill McAteer Johnson.
Yeah. Fabulous. The connection is Pennsylvania, and I'll explain why. The Johnson Club in Hillsville, Pennsylvania, is a private club which has one review on Yahoo. It takes you to the mountains without leaving the area. It's not much to join, so become a member today.
That sounds really foreboding.
Lloyd's of Pennsylvania provides customized services in the food industry, specializing in frozen desserts and exports to Bermuda. There's also a senator in Pennsylvania named Lloyd K. Smucker. Which I just love as a name, Lloyd K. Smucker. Corry is a city located northwestern of Pennsylvania, which was famous in the late 19th and early 20th century for being the manufacturer of Climax steam locomotives, which, if I nerded up correctly, I think that may or may not be the steam engine from Back to the Future. In Houtsdale, Pennsylvania, is McAteer Street. It has a post office on it. That's the connection. The connection of our surnames. And now, finally, it's over to Christian to total up those points on the supercomputer and to find out who is today's winner.
Thank you, Dave. Beep, 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 beep. The winner of the information superhighway is Rob Lloyd.
information superhighway, Rob.
Porn.
And that's the end of the program. And I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the recording the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesleyan. Our website is www.grainoftruth.com.au, and you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/grainoftruthshow, and on Twitter at grainoftruths. And now it just leaves me to thank our panel, Rowan Johnson, Rob Lloyd, John Corrie, Scott Magetia, our announcer, Christian Bizzari, our composer, Matthew Hadcraft, our logo designer, Tom Markovich, our sound restorer, Armin Petit, Daniel Sutton at the Wesleyan. I've been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day!
This has been a Monster at Flinders Street production.